Hammer Films, the iconic British company known for its gothic horror films in the 1960s, is back on screen. The vampire movie, Let Me In, was released this weekend, the first movie bearing the Hammer name in over 30 years. Yet, many critics claim the new film does not have the same depth of the films released in the studio's glory days. Reverend Paul Leggett is the author of Terence Fisher, Horror, Myth, and Religion. In it, the Presbyterian pastor argues how one of Hammer's leading directors used his Christian faith in crafting his films. Charles Collins spoke to Reverend Leggett about this legacy.
The way I explain Hammer to younger people is a lot of the films they know, you know, everything from Star Wars to Lord of the Rings to The Matrix, you know, are all made by people who were heavily influenced by the Hammer tradition and all have their own homages to Hammer, you know, in the course of those films. So this whole generation of from George Lucas to Peter Jackson to Tim Burton to even Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese has this famous quote, you know, that says when we went to see a picture and saw the logo of a Hammer film, we knew we were going to see something special.
Now, when we think of the history of horror films, in the United States especially, our first thought is those early Universal films of, you know, the Dracula, Frankenstein, right. The Wolfman, the canon, so to speak. Now, the Hammer films tackled pretty much the same subjects as the early Universal films. How were the Hammer films handled differently than those that earlier period from the 30s to the early 50s that one could think of as that Universal period? Mm-hmm. How did Hammer change things?
Well, they changed things very drastically. First of all, going back to the actual literary sources, they set things in period, and what they really did was, you know, Tolkien's view of fantasy is that it's like a parallel but separate world from the world of physical reality. But when you enter into the land of fantasy, you see reality from a whole different perspective, and you see it in a more ample way. So what really Hammer did was these things were film fantasy. You know, Terence Fisher's famous line, he did fairy tales for adults. They don't take, I mean, they have a generic sense of being part of some kind of vague Victorian world, but it's very generic. They aren't really interested in any kind of historical period. You know, the Universal films basically started off being filmed in contemporary period, but then they kind of phased out of that into kind of a nondescript sort of Middle European. I mean, it's interesting, those films in the 40s, you've got people running all over Central Europe, and World War II is not even thought about. It's not non-existent, you know, in films made in 1942, 43, 44. So they did develop their own kind of but Hammer had a consistent view of it. So what Hammer did was they did three basic things. One, they went back to the literary sources for inspiration. Secondly, they basically filmed these pictures the way you would film Shakespeare. A lot of these people had worked with Laurence Olivier and had been in his films that were done in the late 40s into the 50s where he's filming Shakespeare. And, you know, Olivier kind of had devised a cinematic approach to Shakespeare. That gave kind of a realism, a serious note to things that were kind of supernatural and fantastic. You know, in Shakespeare, you're dealing with witches and spirits and ghosts and those other kind of things, and the people have to react to those things in a way that comes across as believable in a certain style. You know, not in a realistic style, but at least a serious style. So that was the second thing that they did. And the third thing was that they really filmed these pictures as part of a fantasy world. It was very much the once upon a time. It was, this is Hammer world is a world alongside of Narnia and Middle-earth, you know. and they did this at great length. There's very few shots that establish an identifiable world. You know, they did Dracula and the Hound of the Baskervilles with no scenes of London, which would have been incredible in the 30s.
You, of course, wrote a book about Terence Fisher, one of the directors. You talk about this being a fantasy world, much like Tolkien, but But in this world, Christianity is a very real part of that world in a way that, for example, you wouldn't see in Narnia or Middle Earth. How was Christianity used in these films?
Yeah, certainly Fisher's films, I would say, were religious allegories. You know, he said in an interview that basically all of his films were variations on the story of the fall and the Garden of Eden. And they really fit that way. You have many of his films have an opening prologue where you have some kind of a fall, sin first emerges. And but kind of like, you know, you would Tolkien's view of a fantasy goes all the way back to the Arthurian legends, where Christianity is very explicit. And it's, you know, it's certainly there in symbolically in Narnia, and also in Charles Williams' novels, which are not that well known in the United States, but very excellent novels, and they're better known in Britain. Williams was part of the Inklings, and he has a very strong sense of Christianity, you know, descend into hell and war in heaven and All Hallows Eve. So they're if you think of them as allegories, you know, they have both the element of fantasy but also the element of spirituality. Now that was true in the I think the tradition that was first established at Hammer, which began to dissipate by around 1970 when they didn't have quite the same production crew that they had to begin with. But Christianity is there, of course, again. In very much of symbolic reality, you know, in Fisher's world, the cross is everywhere, which I think is interesting. You know, the cross comes out of candlesticks, windmills, swords. You know, Fisher has this kind of view of the world that the world has been redeemed by Christ, but evil is still very active in it. And what you do is you bring the reality of Christ to the evil that is confronting you in your immediate context. But that reality of Christ has seemed like it's everywhere. It's all around.
Of course, when you deal with vampire pictures, you know, the Dracula movies, the Christian allegory is easy because the Christian symbols are so much part of the mythology with the cross and
right.
The Holy Communion and the power of the priest. Was this just part of the mythology of a vampire which they used, or did it go deeper into the stories?
Well, this is very much part of Dracula. I mean, Dracula is very much of a Christian allegory. And Van Helsing in the actual book Dracula gets downright preachy at times. So the focus of Dracula that made that as a novel is it presents the demonic in a world where people don't believe in the supernatural. So, you know, this is late Victorian society. It was written in 1897. And Stoker's addressing an issue that was later going to be addressed by people like G.K. Chesterton and later the Inklings, you know, or C.S. Lewis especially. You know, the modern world doesn't want to believe in demons or spirits or even God. So the thrust of Dracula is what happens to these poor people who keep trying to come up with some, quote, rational or scientific explanation for things that are absolutely spiritual. And so that spirit definitely gets picked up in certainly Fisher's vampire films, and to some extent definitely in Freddie Francis as well. Fisher was, you know, raised as a Christian Scientist and taught to believe that there was no such thing as evil, and then he spent some time in the Merchant Marine, traveling around after the First World War, and you know, became convinced evil is real as he saw it in the world. And he converted to Anglicanism. Freddie Francis was an Irish Catholic, and I think a pretty devout Catholic. And his use of that imagery is interesting too. A little bit different in films like Dracula Has Risen from the Grave. He's got an interesting counterpart to Fisher. But certainly for both those guys, this was a picture of a world where, you know. The devil is real, God is real, Christ is real. The problem is that they presented a modern world that was itself unrealistic in denying these things. And that's a critical feature. There's always this kind of trying to dismiss it. There's always the kind of rationalist in these films who says, "Oh, we can't believe in vampires or whatever else." And they're usually the ones who suffer the most because they're totally unprepared for the reality. And you always have to have some kind of very much spiritual figure. I call him like a man of wisdom who understand, like a Van Helsing or a Duke de Richelieu or these characters abound in the Fisher films, who really understand that, the physical world is real, the spiritual world is just as real, if not more so.
I grew up watching these movies on TV, the Saturday, Sunday serials, mm-hmm. a little bit before, cable TV became such a big deal. A few years ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago, I saw some references to it and said, hey, this is great. I ordered them on DVD, and, the little hammer packs came. And you stick it in, and you realize there's a lot of nudity, a lot of sex, a lot more graphic violence than I saw when I watched them on TV. And a lot of people have said, "Oh, how can you talk about Christian themes in these films when they're so graphic?" What's your answer to that?
Well, I have a general answer. Let me back up a little bit. My immediate answer to that is: anybody read the Old Testament recently? It turns out graphic violence and sex. I think it's part of the human condition. And when you're dealing with the question of evil, these things all come up, So I think that's the answer right there initially on that one. I have to say, too, not to date myself, but I went through this experience of seeing these films first in the theater. And I think that's totally different than having seen them on TV, especially in black and white. Just have seen them first. And this is like this generation talking about the George Lucases and Peter Jacksons and so forth, Tim Burton's and the rest, is when you saw them, on a large screen in full color. I mean, this was an experience. And I think, watching them on, when they came on TV, that was still in an era where a lot of it was black and white. And it just was very different. It didn't have anywhere near the same impact. But I would say in terms of the content, now first of all, nudity doesn't really come in, is not in Fisher or Francis's films. Nudity doesn't come in. The first time Hammer uses nudity is in a suspense film called Crescendo, which is released in 1970. And in some cases, the nudity of the later films is warranted. In most cases, I would argue it's completely exploitative. And the original generation of Hammer people did not want to get into that stuff. So there's a real shift that comes in the late 60s. There certainly is sex. But again, in a lot of these Hammer films, it's like Hitchcock. You think you see more than you really are seeing. I think the sexual imagery in Brides of Dracula is extremely powerful. There's no nudity at all. But it's far more powerful than a later film like The Vampire Lovers, which really does get to, which is, so much of it becomes unnecessary. It was there's a book called Hammer Glamour, right? That talks about all of the these busty female stars in so many of the Hammer films. But Martine Beswick, who was in many of these and did do nude scenes, brief nude scenes in Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, which I think really work in that particular part of the story. But she made the point. She said she thought as Hammer kind of got off the rails there, in kind of lost her direction in the early 70s, they just threw in more violence and more sex with no real point. And she said they really sacrificed what they were doing. And I think, unfortunately, I think Hammer laid the foundation for what we would call the postmodern horror film, which begins with The Exorcist. In the postmodern horror film, good and evil are not clearly discerned. Many times good isn't even there. Evil is often triumphant, and we've been saddled with that stuff for 40 years. But I'm afraid Hammer was the first one who went into that when they kind of lost their bearings in the early 70s.
You talk about this postmodern period. More and more films now, even the ones that deal with a supernatural, with the good and the evil, why do you think that this kind of tension, this spirituality, this good and evil, we don't see it as much in today's horror films?
Well, I think it reflects kind of, frankly, a demise of Christianity in Western culture. I think we've, after Watergate and Vietnam and the sexual revolution and so forth, it really is in the same kind of belief system that I think this is certainly true in the United States, probably more so in Europe. You know that we don't have a cultural dimension to Christianity at all, and at least these films, you know, came out of a period where Christianity was being questioned. We live in a world where Christianity is ignored, and I just think, you know, people don't have a perspective on that at all, and I think you end up with a very kind of perverted kind of view if you think that only evil is real, you know. And even after a while, what makes it evil? Because if you have no moral or spiritual baseline, you know, for definition and comparison, then it's just force, just power of one kind or another. And I think all the Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Friday the 13th, all that stuff, it reflects a world where there's no, you know, there really is no sense of Christian reality. If you think of a film like Carrie back in 1976, the only religious figure in the film is Carrie's mother, who's a complete fanatic. So that, you know, that kind of view keeps coming, you know, comes into things. And, you know, I at the same time, you know, I think there's been some interesting Christian films with Christian messages, but they haven't been of this kind of spiritual allegory type that was once in fantasy and horror. You know, even fantasy films don't seem to have it too much anymore. So I think it reflects the culture that we're in, quite frankly.
Have there been any movies in, let's say, the last 10 or 15 years that you thought at least attempted to have this kind of allegory?
The one director that I really like is Guillermo del Toro, and he did Pan's Labyrinth, and actually did the first two Hellboy movies. Also, he worked on The Orphanage, and there isn't a real explicit Christian message in those, but at least those films had a much stronger sense of good and evil, and I think they're certainly films that were consistent with a Christian outlook. And I think they represent some of the very best horror and fantasy of the past 10 years. I would say that Pan's Labyrinth and The Orphanage would be among my choices as the best horror films of the 21st century. And I've heard he's interested in going back to doing some of the gothic classics, you know, like Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I'd be interested to see, you know, what he might do with those, you know, and how those would turn out. But I have to say, I'm much more impressed with fantasy films of the last 10 years than I am with horror films. I mean, certainly Lord of the Rings and the Chronicles of Narnia and even The Matrix, you know, had much more that kind of classic sense of fantasy and sense of good and evil. I mean, the sense of good and evil. And I think there's a lot of religious, I mean, I think The Matrix has enormous Christ imagery with, you know, Neo like on the cross at the end. And that's certainly there also, in the Narnia films, as it is in the books. And it's that kind of world that certainly reflected the good and evil, the spiritual realities in Tolkien's work. So I would say that actually the tradition of Hammer at its best is really seen in the last 10 years in more in fantasy films than in horror films. And I'm a purist. I think a horror film has to deal with the supernatural, so that a lot of what's so-called horror films, the kind of the Saw and stuff like that, really aren't horror films at all because they don't really deal with the supernatural. They're what we call torture porn. You know, they're just, but they don't even fit the classic. I mean, at least a horror film, even a film like Psycho, has to raise at least the possibility of the supernatural, even if it's, you know, kind of explained away at the end. You at least have to think that there's something supernatural going on that raises the question of the spiritual. If nothing supernatural is there, you end up with no sense of the spiritual, and you know, you end up with a lot of times just bare effects. I mean, I'm astonished that Paranormal Activity was such a big hit. My kids have all been raised on the classic tradition, and my daughter, adult, she's just graduated from college. We're sitting there watching this thing and saying, you know, this makes no sense. This is boring. And there's nothing scary about it. You know, there's a great difference between being scared and being shocked. You know, if you see somebody being tortured, yeah, you can be shocked. You know, that you're watching cruelty. But that's not the same thing as being scared. Being scared has having a sense of the uncertainty and the problem of evil, the problem of suffering in the world. I think things that scare you are things that you think about long after you've seen the film. A shock just comes and goes. You know, you see the blood, and oh, you know, and it's gross and whatever else. So I have to say, I keep going to horror films hoping to be scared, and I'm almost never am. I may be grossed out, but that's a far cry from being scared.